It's Level Up Time, the show that gives you context to behind the headlines. And today we're lighting the match and delving deeper into the illicit cigarette trade. Joining me in studio is Mr. Johnny Molotto, who's the head of corporate and regulatory affairs at BAT. He helps me understand whether a proposed new tobacco bill actually helps the government to rein in a part of the economy that has grown in epic proportions, from dusty border towns to bustling city streets, all the while enriching tax evaders and at the same time taking our country's global positioning as a serious financial player up in smoke. Well, thank you for coming in and thank you for taking the time to come chat with us. Mm-hmm. I think this conversation is a strange one for mm-hmm. many South Africans mm-hmm. because when the initial laws around smoking in public and ukusazana dlamini zuma, all of that, was the first time that suddenly we were thinking about cigarettes, smoking and government in the same in the same sentence. Fast forward to 2020, when we have a global shutdown, and then again it rears its head back into our lives with the kind of locking down of access to cigarettes for smokers.
Yep.
CA and I did a show a couple of months ago, and again, the cigarette conversation came up for us with this tobacco bill. So we thought, okay, let us understand a little bit further to what is actually going on. And I think nobody can be better placed than a person with your experience both in government and in the sector. So let's start here. Why is it even important for us to care about this industry and what it means for me, a non-smoking South African?
Yeah. I mean, you gave a very good context that I don't think people pay attention to any particular industry until there's, you know, some noise around it. And I think for us, the noise has always been there, but simply because, as you say, why should I care? Nobody paid attention. As long as I'm not a smoker, it doesn't bother me. It's not my issue. And the issues around what is bothering us now, both from a regulatory point of view and the illicit trade that has, you know, been making the news, is from about 2014, you saw a spike, an increase in the trend around illicit trade in cigarettes, which is a concern that we started raising then. And government's response was, you regulate everything, you know. Everything that you do, if you don't have a response, you regulate. And the first set of these regulations that we have now came out in 2018. And then there was a public consultation process. And there was a huge noise around that, you know. Submissions were made, you know, it cost us there. We did a lot of, media amplification around this because we were concerned at that time. There were a number of issues, if you remember, in South Africa. The president established the New Gen Commission of Inquiry into SARS because of all the issues that were happening at SARS that eroded the capabilities of SARS to enforce. And within the same space, you had all those dynamics around the tobacco bill, which were concerned to say that we are seeing SARS losing its capacity to enforce. We are seeing illicit shoot up. And yet your response is regulation, which will further table charge illicit. So we raise those concerns, right? We still manage to participate in the process because we believe in regulation. We believe that we should be regulated. Any industry that trades in this country, there should be a level playing field. That is the intent behind regulation. As long as it's evidence-based and it's based on a proper socioeconomic impact assessment, right? We know that the product we sell is harmful. Hence, when you do that, you balance between the economic opportunities as well as the social and health impact. But none of that was
okay,
done.
Wait. I think let's take a step back.
Sure.
When we talk about illicit cigarette trade.
Yeah.
Right. For a lot of us,
yeah.
I don't even know
exactly
who's real and who's not. Yeah. What does it even look like to be a fake cigarette?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Let's talk about that first.
Okay.
So that we understand what that is, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the regulation around it.
And it's a fair point, because illicit cigarettes have a number of characteristics, right? It could be smuggled product, it could be counterfeit, it could be what is called illicit whites, those are, that are sold outside packs. We don't get most of those here that are plain, just plain whites, right? But in South Africa, the biggest a driver of illicit trade is what we call duty not paid. So those are tax evaded products. So they basically do not pay any excise duties or VAT. So basically every year, we all know when the minister announces
the sin tax,
starts with the sin taxes, right? Those are the taxes we're talking about. People may not understand what excise is, but it's the sin tax, right? Mm. So the minister will always start and saying, you know, we are increasing sin taxes. We start with tobacco, alcohol, and, you know.
I drink, so I'm listening very closely.
Exactly, right? Those are the taxes that we are talking about. So over the years, they were hovering from about 16 and so on. They've increased. Today, they sit at 26, 22, including VAT for a pack of 20 cigarettes, right? So the way it works in terms of sin taxes, so that the audience also can follow, right? The way it works for sin taxes in tobacco, it's a duty at source. By duty at source, it means when you are about to release a product into market for consumption into the market as a manufacturer, you declare to SARS that I'm going to release 100 million sticks for consumption in the home market. And therefore SARS will invoice you for the duty that is due for those cigarettes.
Even before you sell
Even
them.
Before we sell.
Okay.
So these are taxes that we as manufacturers collect on behalf of SARS even before we place product on the market. So let's just say for argument's sake, today is 26-22, right? As per the latest budget that the minister announced. So therefore, you need to actually make provision for those taxes. And then once the product lands in market, the retailers, the distributors, all the value chain, the entire channel will have to then start adding their margins, right? Your distribution margins, retail margins, and so on. So then you can, that's where you start making your profits. So how then, when just the tax alone is that much, can you sell a pack for 10 rands? How do you afford, even if you are running a loss leader, you can't run a loss leader of your whole portfolio. You can have one loss leader, and then the rest of your portfolio should be selling at market value.
How big is this industry? How big is the cigarette industry in South Africa?
The cigarettes, we count in sticks, right?
Okay.
Currently, because we do, at least for us, we do base this on evidence. Every year, we do a market sizing, right? We commission a study. We just, the researchers are in field now. We've commissioned for the 25 iteration. Every year for the past couple of years, I would say 6-7 years, we've been doing the same thing. They are in market now. We'll have the results probably towards the end of May, early June. So we size it in terms of sticks. The market is currently at about 37 billion sticks, right? 37 Ooh. Billion sticks.
Wow.
Of those 37 billion sticks, 6 billion sticks are smuggled product. They come from across the border, right? Largely the source is Zimbabwe, right? Because it's a big tobacco-growing country.
Well, okay. I do want us to talk a little bit about the value chain.
Yes.
So we'll come back to that.
Yes, yes. And then the rest is produced in market. That's why South Africa is an outlier. We are one of the countries where our problem is homegrown. The illicit manufacturers are right here at home. To give you a view, amongst the three multinationals, ourselves, Japan Tobacco International and Philip Morris International, we declare, I think, about 7 or so billion sticks. All the other 13 local manufacturers combined, they declare 2 billion sticks a year.
Wow.
Right? So how is that possible? What do they do with all that capacity?
Yeah.
So our view is that that declared amount of cigarettes for excise payment is to make sure they are compliant with their license requirement, because you have to show that you are trading, right? So therefore, there's that big delta of that 21 billion sticks that we are talking about that makes up the rest of the number. So give or take 18 or so, 19 to make up that delta. So it's a vast market. That is why you can see them every street corner that you go into South Africa. Tabletops, spaza shops, except the key accounts, which are your formal channels, you know?
Yeah. Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about you. You mentioned 13 manufacturers, other 13 other manufacturers.
Yeah.
And we know that Japan, what's it called?
Japan Tobacco.
BAT and Philip Morris are all internet multinational companies. And in the value chain of cigarettes, Zimbabwe, having historically been a tobacco grower, grower of the plant, how does this value chain work? Where does it start and how many people does it employ? Do we have local in South Africa growers as well as manufacturers? What does it look like? What does it look like in terms of people engaged in this environment?
So Zimbabwe, I mean, tobacco growing contributes a significant amount to the GDP of Zimbabwe. It's a massive, I would think they are third in terms of tobacco growers in the world. They are quite massive, right? And but Zimbabwe has a very low smoking incidence, right? Not many people smoke in Zimbabwe. So, but they have excess capacity that they produce. Hence, they can be able to export. Let's call it export because it's a combination of both, right? All of those cigarettes into South Africa. A lot of it, you know, due to our porous borders, is product that is smuggled into our market.
Mm. There was a big bust a couple, what month are we in? 2 months ago, I think.
Yep.
At Baitbridge, something like 5 million rands. I couldn't understand that number because it sounded like so many cigarettes, and I wondered
That's a drop in the ocean, a very tiny drop in the ocean. Because if I tell you that, if you look at, if we say the market is that big, our assessment is that based on research that we conduct is that what is causing the fiscus on an annual basis, it's about 28 billion a year. 28 billion that's not collected, right? So that's the size of the illicit market. Now, we may argue with different researchers and other sources, but it's a sizable. I mean, we estimate illicit is about 75% of the market. The universities of Cape Town's research unit on excisable economics estimated at 60%, still massive. However you look at it.
That's more than half.
Yeah, it's still massive.
Who benefits?
Of course.
Who gets this money?
Of course, it's the illicit manufacturers. You know, it's all the people who run these factories. They are right here in the country. Some of them not even 60 kilometers from SARS, you know, very close by, right? And by the way, the research spits out what it spits out, right? Because when we conduct the research, the methodology they use is a simple one. They just go into a store and ask, you know, just give me the cheapest you have. They don't ask for any brand, just give me the cheapest you have. And you do that across a number of provinces. We do it this nationally typically. And it will spit out the numbers and it will tell you this is brand A that belongs to manufacturer A. So, and the biggest provinces that have always been a problem, we've always had KZN, Free State, Western Cape and Gauteng. But now you see Limpopo as well from a lot of smuggled product, right?
Mm.
And all those manufacturers, right now you have three big ones in the main because you see their products everywhere. And, you know, you can go yourself and pick up a pack for less than 26 rand 22, right? So they have not even paid duty, at least paid duty that is due to the taxman.
Mm.
So we complain about VAT, the government doesn't have money. There, it's lying on the table, you can collect it because you know where they are, right? All you need to do is just to put enforcement measures at source because the problem is at source. It's
so,
the problem
so what
of under-declaration.
Okay.
And let me answer your other question before you do a follow-up. You were asking, in South Africa, do we have growers? I think it's an important question to ask, answer as well, because we do have growers that have also been severely impacted by, you know, your illicit trade, because They have traditionally sold to us their leaf, and we've brought 90% of their leaf. But as we have declined over the years, they have also declined. So the value chain, there's a knock-on effect, right from the retailers in the formal channel to ourselves as manufacturers, the processors who process the raw leaf or green leaf, and right up to the growers. So the growers have been shrinking over the period of time. Whereas the guys on the other side are actually growing. You know, the growers are doing very well in Zimbabwe. So these are the problems that we have. So it's not a victimless crime, right? Because when you go down further down into the value chain, you realize that we used to have black farmers, they're gone now, right? And tobacco typically in the legal space has got a massive multiplier effect. For every single job you create 92 more across the value chain, because there will be people, you know, who will be doing distribution, who will be doing working in retail and so on. So huge multiplier effect. So you erode all of that goodwill, all of that opportunity. Right now, you have the latest unemployment numbers. In the first quarter of the year, we lost 300,000 jobs. And these are jobs that you could have easily provided for had you actually, all you needed to do was create a level playing field. You don't need to treat anybody special. Treat everybody equally, right?
So, so the cigarette manufacturers, cigarette brands are hurting.
Yeah.
And you said yourself, this is an industry that also has a harm factor.
Yeah.
You know, so young people, old people,
yeah,
and the impact on health,
yes,
is also on a multiplier, mm, right? Mm-hmm. And for those people who say, well, maybe this is not a bad thing, let the industry eat itself up and it will die out.
Actually,
can it die out?
Actually not. In fact, it's growing. Since COVID, during the period just leading up to COVID in 2019, you saw a slight decline in the illicit industry and a slight uptick in the legal industry. The Revenue Authority collected more money than they collected in the previous year because the products that were sold legally were paying more duties. Post-COVID, that shot up. So if you are going to say, let the industry eat itself, there is nothing that persuades me, at least, to say that the government is doing anything to reduce. Because remember, with the increase in illicit trade and reduced prices, that also encourages consumption. So it's not eating itself out. And it's the same argument that is made by the Ministry of Health, where they say, with these new regulations they are trying to put into place, when we ask the question that you failed to enforce the current act that you have in place, how are you going to enforce this one? They say it's going to be self-enforcing. It's actually false. Mm-hmm. Because what you are seeing is actually a dog-eat-dog world. The illicit players do what they want. They do what they want. They do as they please with impunity. In all this time that we've raised this issue, we started sounding the alarm bells around 2014 thereabouts, and nothing has been done about it. So what is to convince us to say that it will eat itself up? There is nothing to... All it does, it's actually say to people, actually, crime pays.
Well, look, I had never heard about this, the cigarette bill, until we had a conversation about health with a member of the portfolio committee. Mm. And he tried to explain to us what it is, and I still don't think I quite understand it.
Okay.
Maybe if you could explain to me what this bill is,
yep,
and who the sponsors are, and how far down the line it is.
Yes. So I mentioned to you earlier on that the first iteration of this bill came in 2018. We made all the submissions and it came really to nothing. And I think the intent...
What do you mean came to nothing? Submissions?
Not everything. Then we saw a new version of the bill emerge in 22, this current one, right?
Okay.
Yes. And the process started again. We had to make submissions again. We understand the intent. The intent is that the current Tobacco Products Control Act only controls tobacco, cigarette products, you know, tobacco products. This was before the advent of what we call new categories. So your vapor, your modern oral nicotine pouches, you know, heated tobacco products. These were not there when the initial act was promulgated. Mm. So it needed.
Does it include Hubbly Bubblies?
It didn't. The current act doesn't. It is a tobacco product. It is regulated as a tobacco product, but in its current format, it's still, I would say, semi-regulated through the Customs and Excise Act. But in terms of proper regulation, end-to-end, you know, no under 18 sales, where it can be sold, you know, what are the taxes on it, and all those kind of things. The Act was behind the times, right? Hence, you needed to update your regulation. That's what I'm saying. We're not opposed to regulation. We support regulation, but the regulation must be evidence-based. And South Africa has a very long, rich history of doing very proper regulation. Over the years, we've lost that capability or interest in doing things the right way. So now it's about, here's a problem. My solution is regulation. Go for the most extreme regulation. We don't care what the consequence may be. So this is a very bad bill because it doesn't do a proper socioeconomic impact assessment. What it seeks to do is take a prohibitionist approach. So it's almost like a ban in most.
Prohibitionist, those are fighting words.
It's true. If you look at a lot of the measures that are put in this tobacco bill, a lot of it are restrictions rather than regulations. And immediately you do that, if you can't enforce those restrictions, you further stimulate non-compliant behavior. Where we come from, we also part of that journey of saying we have also evolved. You know, most of us, at least from the multinational space, we now have these new products. And these products are also in recognition of the change landscape. How do we reduce harm of the products we sell? Can we offer the current consumer of tobacco products who still wants their nicotine, but in a different format that is less harmful? Because the biggest harm from cigarettes comes in the act of combustion. When you light it up. When you fire it up, the smoke that it emits contains a lot of toxicants. This is where a lot of the dangers of smoking comes from, whether you are the consumer or
passive,
right? So now with these new products that have gone through a lot of innovation, so if you look at your vapor, for example, you don't combust. It's a liquid that is flavored that contains nicotine. Some of it doesn't even contain nicotine. But you are affording the consumer who struggles to quit. Because, you know, the old adage, you know, from the old school of thinking in government was quit or die, right?
It will.
Right? But we know that it's not been as easy as that. You've had Nicorettes, you know, that have not worked. So we are saying that there are opportunities. We recognize we want to reduce the harmful impact of our product on the consumer. So those consumers, adult consumers who struggle to quit, but would like to reduce their own impact and exposure to tobacco products. Here are alternatives. So you provide them those alternatives. So vapor still emits a vapor, which is not smoke. It contains nicotine, but on the risk continuum, if we're saying at this end, the highest risk is your cigarette, and you go down the risk continuum, you have your tobacco-heated products, then you get to your vapor. At the end of the spectrum is no smoking at all. You're risk-free.
I think when you talk about risk and health impact and eventually death, as it were, these are, for many, many years, well documented about the tobacco industry.
Yeah.
And one of the big regulations we have in South Africa, I mean, I come from an era where there were big, like, parties sponsored by big cigarettes because of the change in the way that advertising or actively seeking new customers was allowed to happen. You know, from the days of Lexington, Yona.
Yeah.
The advertising, right?
Yes.
To where now there is even talk of white-labeled packs that don't have branding at all, right? It doesn't take away the fact that this is an industry that is extremely lucrative to people that are in it. And also an industry that does have significant risk and extremely exciting for young people because of the way that it has been positioned. So what do you believe is the way to go about reducing risk, particularly for young people, for a government that is already got an overburdened health system? What should we be doing?
And yeah, you said you didn't understand the bill. And yeah, you're talking.
You just explained it, yes, James.
Yes. Actually, you've just mapped it out so well to say that, you know, you've seen yourself the evolution from the time where there were freedoms to advertise right up to, you know, now you are seeing a lot of, you know, these, I would call them restrictions, but let's go with regulation, right? It's a lucrative business. Used to be for some of us that are compliant, but it's very, very certainly lucrative for those that don't have to play by the rules, definitely. Mm-hmm. If you don't have to pay a cent in tax, definitely your pocket, everything is profit for you, right? So certainly extremely lucrative for those. For us, definitely not, because I would tell you, in terms of my company in particular, since 2019 to date, we have lost 40% of our volume, right? And secondly, we've lost close on 53% of our headcount. The illicit players are growing, but they contribute nothing to the economy, right? So if you talk about lucrative, talk to my former colleagues who have exited the business. Talk to the value chain that has been impacted to this. They don't see it like that, right? But the illicit players, certainly, they are thriving. They are doing very well. So that's addressing the issue about how lucrative it is. And by the way, government is not seeing a cent of this. And neither is that money available for us to be using now. Now you have various political players at each other's throats about how to manage the budget, when actually this is the money that they've been losing. It's not just us, by the way. The illicit economy generally, because they learned from the tobacco industry how they can get away without actually being compliant. So the illicit industry has grown from the Zamazamas, the alcohol sector. So it's massive, you know, how the illicit industry has grown. Textiles has been a big problem for years. Now, if you look at that and you say that the industry is still lucrative. And by the way, let's not forget the consumer, because the consumer is a consumer that is a victim of circumstance, right? Because the consumer is stretched, is unemployed, but still need their fix. So they become complicit in feeding this illicit industry because that's what they can afford and they go there. If you wanted to talk about reducing incidents, right? Cigarettes were not meant to be cheap. That's why the taxes on them are so high, right? That is why because excise tax, remember, it's a tax that is intended to discourage consumption of a product. Whether it's sugar tax and whatever, it's the intent is to reduce that, right? But it's not doing that because they are playing outside the square four corners of the regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Then you say, then this is very exciting to the youth as well, right?
I just think about smoking behind the toilets at school.
Because, like any regulation you put in place, if you do not enforce it, it's basically, you know, a worthless exercise.
Mm.
And I know for a fact that we have raised some of the issues where we've picked up non-compliant packs, where we've picked up non-compliance behaviors by other players and reported to the Ministry of Health. That was 2020. Today, zero response, not even an acknowledgement. So you know that even when a player in the industry can raise a concern and zero response, right? So it is a concern to us as well. Our products, I mentioned earlier on, are for adults only. We do not interact with anybody that is under 18. That's the law, right? Yet, we do not. Our practice is we do not interact with any... And that is the issue of regulators to enforce and ensure that actually suppliers do not actually provide these products or create access for these products to the youth or people under the age of 18. Then if you look at, you're asking me the question, then what is the alternative for this? This is where we come in and say, for us, if you're saying the regulation is not working, it's not working because it's not fit for purpose, right? Because it doesn't acknowledge evolution in the market. It doesn't acknowledge innovation that has happened over the years. If you look at countries like Sweden, you look at countries like the UK, you look at countries like New Zealand, all of these countries have come up with progressive regulation. By the way, if you look at Sweden, they came with their own fit for purpose regulation. The people used to consume a lot of tobacco, of cigarettes, were women than men, right? Mm-hmm. They were heavily indexed towards cigarettes. And they came up where you had snus, and it's evolved over the years as an alternative product. And now they have made sure actually that their regulations talk to what is fit for their population.
You know, snus, today, when you say snus, it makes me think about those gogos with the snuff. It's like an upmarket snuff.
Today, Sweden is almost smoke-free. And smoke-free, in terms of the WHO definition of smoke-free, is any country that can reach a smoking incidence of 5%. They are at 5.3%. So they are almost there. So we can do it as well as South Africa. As long as we are not dogmatic about how we regulate. We regulate on evidence. And actually, at the heart of this, we need to think of how you help the consumer. How do you help the consumer that cannot quit or won't quit and help them to actually transition to lower risk or risk reduced products? That is, of course, when we, in our world, when we refer to reduced risk products, we mean on the basis of a weight of evidence that the consumer has completely switched away from cigarettes. They are not poly users combining different formats, right? They still stick to an alternative product and completely move away from cigarettes.
So we spoke a little bit about the value chain and Zimbabwe in particular, it being one of the world's highest growers and exporters of the tobacco leaf. And there's the connection with a porous border and definitely a value chain in the illicit trade too. Can you talk to me a little bit about what that looks like? What does it look like, this leaf traveling from a grower in Zimbabwe and ending up in a spaza shop as a loose straw?
They have like mostly family-owned farming units that they run, and they sell these at auctions on the tobacco floors, and manufacturers buy this, and they do manufacture, by the way, in Zimbabwe, right? We do have some leaf that comes across the border, but they manufacture as well in Zimbabwe. Because what you see mostly, you won't see the leaf itself coming through, but what is visible that you can always see on the news, it's all the guys carrying master cases running across the border with those.
I never used to think that thing is real.
It's real.
I was getting ready for this show, I think the number of times
it's real
that I've seen images, that I've read articles, and hence the article that I just read about last month, even coming through Baitbridge, and another one coming from the port as well. So it's
Mocena
not just
as well. It's massive. It's a big problem. We all know that South Africa has porous borders. You require massive amount of resources to police those borders, and we are not, unreasonable in saying that you can fix all these problems overnight. But the ones that you can quickly fix are the ones that are right here at home. Those ones, it's quite unacceptable that so many years. I mean, you may not have heard about, the illicit trade. You may not be aware of the intricacies of that. But the New Gen Commission was big. And it revolved around largely the unit that used to enforce against illicit tobacco. So that was big. That was something, it's factual, it happened, right? Because at the heart of this was exactly this industry. And to date, we have not seen any meaningful enforcement. And by meaningful enforcement, I mean where you start seeing the kingpins behind bars, when you start seeing prosecutions. What you see now, small runners here and there, there's a raid, there's a truck stop, they arrested the truck driver, they raided a small shop here and there. Those won't move the needle. You need to go to source. You need to go to the actual manufacturers. They are known to the regulator. SARS knows them because they license them, right? You need to wonder, why is this business?
They license them.
Of course, we're all licensed. You have to be licensed to have a business to run a tobacco a manufacturing facility. So they are. So you have to ask yourself that how come, you know, you can see, you know, all these volumes increasing, cigarettes flooding the market, but the guys are still declaring the same level of.
So are you saying that there is no political will to deal with the scourge of illicit trade?
If there is, I haven't yet experienced it. I haven't. If we look, for example, if we say we have a crisis as a country, because for me this is crisis, right? Because this has actually, the problem is not as small as we think it is. Because if you had seen that Gold Mafia documentary,
I did.
Then it showed you how the guys are able to take the proceeds from illicit tobacco, fund other illicit activities, gold smuggling, money laundering, human trafficking. So it's massive. And all of this comes because you can convert your cash from cigarettes very quickly to fund other things. And this money exits the country. It's money that doesn't find its way into the fiscus. So if we start to say in the country we had problems of load shedding and affected all of us, we paid attention. Today, we're all actually scratching our heads and saying, well, where is this money going to come from when we don't increase VAT? Even the Minister of Finance is scratching his head to say, I have to find this money. He's saying to you, here it is. Here it is. Simple. Take customs officers. In 2019, where we saw an uptick in legal volumes and a slight decline in illicit, what they did, they took customs officers and put them in manufacturing sites. Deterrence. You saw an immediate return. 3 months, only 3 months they did that for.
Wow.
And the guys were there to observe what the guys are doing. And suddenly all of them were very well behaved. They declared, you saw increase in. So where did that money come from? Suddenly, where did all those declarations come from, right? So that's number one. The other one is around, so I explained to you earlier on how they determine the taxes for us, right? Every year the minister will announce excise, which is our sin tax, plus VAT, and say, this is your excise for the year. And then that is what is called combined VAT and your excise, your minimum collectible tax, right? So when you have that, it then gives you a sense as to how much should be at least due to the taxman, right? But the challenge is here, the customs officials, the guys from SARS can do that. They understand what that means, but it's very technical. When they arrest somebody and they seize their stock, these illicit players can easily come with fake invoices and say, well, here it is, release our stock, right? But the customs officers are able to read beyond that because they are trained, but there are few of them. So as a force multiplier, you need all of law enforcement involved. And this is not just my words. The SARS commissioner, when he came into office in May 2019, one of the first things he said was that the illicit trade problem, I think it was 2020 actually when he said that the illicit trade problem is bigger than SARS. It's an all of government effort. So we're saying to help the police, because the police do seize. Sometimes they are successful, sometimes they are not. Sometimes they get their stock, they can arrest the people. Sometimes they are not so successful, right? So we're saying simplify the process. Put a price, put a minimum price, and saying anything below this, it doesn't matter what your invoice say, anything below this price is illicit. So you simplify the process. So any law enforcement agency, they find Pumi sitting with a carton or a master case of cigarettes that are below that price. No questions asked. This can't be. No matter your invoice, this can't be. Because you are not selling, you couldn't have paid taxes and still be a viable business selling at this level. So there must be something very shady about your business.
Look, I mean, I think just listening to you and all of the moving parts in this sector, it's clear to me that working together between the business owner, between the manufacturers, and the government's entire value chain, you can solve this problem. But I need to understand why you feel the bill is not the beginning of the solution.
Yeah. So The bill, our sense is that based on how we've seen this bill proceed, it's been very dodgy in terms of not following. It's transparent. That's why I'm saying South mm-hmm. Africa has a very rich heritage of how we've done policy in the past. I used to be in government myself. Mm-hmm. I know that process, right? Suddenly, you see something that is fast-tracked, something that skips stages, something that is a tick-box exercise. Because we have an interest in this, we pay very close attention to this. We participate in every consultation. We follow every consultation. We challenge every deviation from the process. So we know these things, right? We've been even at NEDLEC. And that NEDLEC process, thank goodness, with a change in government, came because of the pressure we brought onto the Ministry of Health to take that bill back to NEDLEC, because they did not take it for a proper consultation. We know the liquor bill went to NEDLEC for a proper assessment, right? So we know how that process unfolded. Ours was different. Why should it be different? It's regulation, right? Why should we be treated differently from other industries? If we are to be regulated, let's know that the process was above board. Everybody had a fair chance to say what they needed to say and make their inputs. Let's also have a proper socioeconomic impact assessment, because we are not a banned product. Let's start there. Cigarettes are not illegal in South Africa. It's not paying duties that is illegal. So therefore, if it's not illegal, you regulate us. If you are going to regulate us, just make sure, therefore, as a product that is still supposed into the market, was supposed to be trading, do the balancing act. Do your cost-benefit analysis in terms of, if you do this, what are the consequences of it? Because if you don't do that, your whole foundation of that regulation is flawed. So that's why we're not saying we're opposed to regulation. We're saying do it in a very evidence-based way. Because everywhere you've gone in this process, we see even the outcomes of the report. They say, oh, well, people are supportive of the bill. Which people? Which people?
I'm going to press you on this, because I asked the question and you haven't answered me very skillfully, like a person who's been in government before. Who stands to benefit? Who is the sponsor of this, onerous, it seems, and pushing through this bill without all of the proper consultative process? Yeah. Who stands to gain?
So in terms of the bill itself, you know, this is a process that is largely driven from the philosophy of the WHO, right? Yeah, so that says that you will implement these regulations. So it's like basically a standard format that what the WHO envisages for the world, right, is these kind of tobacco regulations. But it can't be a one-size-fits-all, right? And who is going to benefit out of that? I'm not too sure it's the South African community. I'm not sure even the government itself is going to benefit. Ideally, it should be for the benefit of all of society. At the moment, I see it being for the benefit of the sponsors of the bill from the Ministry of Health, where it originated, right? And by the way, if you say who stands to benefit, we know that the anti-tobacco lobby is very massive. So all the funders of all these anti-tobacco control measures, at the end of the day, the invisible hand that you do not see in all of this, actually you can see through the entire process, which is why we're saying that, is this fit for purpose for South Africa? South Africa has one of the highest illicit incidents. We're different from many markets. South Africa is one of the most unequal societies. We have so many things that are unique to us. That's why I gave you the example of Sweden. Why do you want to come with a straitjacketed piece of regulation and enforce it here without taking the views of all of society? The only beneficiaries I see out of this bill are all going to be those one man, two man NGOs that form part of the anti-tobacco lobby.
Interestingly, I mean, this was Robert Mugabe's view on the anti-tobacco bill, that being one of the biggest producers.
Yeah.
And he famously said, you know, if you are a single person smoking in your car, you pose far less risk than a person drunk in their car, which is interesting. Yeah. But is there work being done to combat? So you've spoken to us about all of the failures and all of the failings. But is there work that is being done to combat this illicit trade?
And is it yielding any kind of fruit? Are there sparks of interest, sparks of wins that can be?
So we saw the Border Management Commissioner. He announced a couple of weeks ago that in 44 days, they managed to seize over 600 million, I think it's 680 million sticks. That's massive. That's massive that came across the border, right? That's in 3 months. So if you were to replicate that over four quarters, they could do some serious damage, right? Because I told you it's 6 billion sticks coming across the border. Mm. If they can even get half of that, it's a win for him, right? Because I think they've made deliberate efforts to make sure that they secure South Africa. They make sure that these illicit products are seized. They prevent that, right? And what we are saying, we're not asking for anything complicated. We know that the country has no resources. And every day we are not enforcing is a day we will not get back. The illicit industry grows. That's why we're saying simplification. Simplify. Put. I know that the commissioner has very far forward-looking measures, AI, you know, technological solutions. But you can do both. While those things, while they take effect, you still need to train people to use those tools. You still have to get the investment from government to do that. But put people in the meantime. We're saying this, we saw it work before. It is a tried and tested. It gave you a benefit. Take this measure. And we say to the Minister of Finance, it's within your control. It's a policy measure. It's a policy instrument. Put a minimum retail price in place. And once you do that, you assist, you increase your law enforcement agency capability. So you actually respond to the call of the commissioner that this is an all of government effort. So you multiply your forces. You're able to now use the police to just seize product. And that serves as a huge deterrence. Then hopefully, you know, the National Prosecuting Authority someday will prosecute.
Don't hold your breath.
Some of the major cases, right? without hope. Then,
are there major cases or individuals who have been arrested in the process of? I mean, we know some of these cases can take many years. But are there at least arrests happening at those levels, or is it only runners and people at the bottom of the rung that
we
are?
We saw a
targeted
preservation order on one of the big manufacturers, Gold Leaf. I think it was August 2019. And, you know, that case went back and forth. We don't know where it went. You know, we thought, okay, finally something major, because these are the guys also were implicated in the Gold Mafia documentary. We don't know where that case is. Then there was the one on the CCTV cameras. We have CCTV cameras. We were the first movers. We said, with pleasure, come. We have nothing to hide. And then the illicit players took the government to court. So it's still a ping pong between government and the illicit players in an effort to try. This is not even prosecution. They're not even prosecuting. Or they are already in court. This is just about compliance to say, guys, we want to see what you are doing there, right? And the guys ran straight to court. So clearly they have something to hide, right? They came with all manner of arguments why they shouldn't have cameras in their factories, right? There was once a case a couple of years ago in the Eastern Cape that actually made a ruling, but it was a provincial division around, you know, what an illicit product is. And we thought, you know, you could build on that and you can start prosecuting. And there was another one recently that I don't recall the actual name of the case, but it was a distributor whose product was sealed, was seized, and I think government was successful in that. Right? But these are not; these are just you know, sprinklings. I wouldn't even call them green shoots. You know, here and there. What you do need first is to actually show a deliberate political commitment to say that, you know, this is an issue that we need to focus on. Like I said to you, you're only seeing the tobacco industry, but you know that the illicit economy, I mean, the illicit, as said in our industry, is about 28 billion a year. The illicit economy on its own, it's over 100 billion a year.
Sure.
Right? So imagine if you could start tackling some of those syndicates. We had, during the State of the Nation address, the president said they dismantled a gold and a tobacco syndicate. I was like, wow, That's impressive, right? So I went online immediately, like combating, and I can't find it. I don't know why it's the best kept secret, because we need to know about these things, right? Because if, you know, government is successful in dealing with criminality, because it's a state of lawlessness that you just need to deal with. Mm. But so far, that's a long way of saying no. The enforcement that's been there, I don't think it's fit for purpose. I don't think it addresses the things it needs to address. Again, go to source. Mm. The guys are right here. You don't have to get them extradited. You don't have to. They are right here. Go and find them.
It's much bigger than what we think it is. I think as South Africans, we have so many things. Mm. We're not really paying attention to some that don't impact us in any way.
Yeah, and Pumi, you know, the one other thing, still on the question you asked me, I just recalled now. South Africa is right now on the grey list, right? And some of the remaining aspects of why, well, I think there's going to be a review in June, why we're still there, is because we did all the things that were supposed to tinker here and there. The biggest one is actually demonstrating that we can prosecute against complicated cases like money laundering, illicit financial flows, da-da-da-da-da, right? Here's an opportunity. Start with this industry. You'll be soon off the grey list. if the ordinary South African doesn't understand the intricacies of the Financial Action Task Force, why we're on the grey list, the Financial Action Task Force certainly does know what is wrong with us.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's a lot to think about. Yep. It's a lot to think about. And thank you for taking the time to explain it the way that you have.
Yep.
I really appreciate it, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
No, I appreciate you inviting us.